From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is made in your local CSA. CSA stands for Community Supported Agriculture. And for many Rochesterians, it has come to mean a farm food club. Maybe you pick up your CSA shares yourself. Maybe you come to a centralized drop-off location. Either way, CSAs have become popular as a way to get fresh produce while supporting smaller farms. But the pandemic has presented some challenges for farms. CSA Day has been an annual tradition. This year it was CSA Week. But has the pandemic cut into what farms are seeing? Are fewer people signing up? We know margins are always thin for farmers. You have got to love the work. Now it's a chance to dive into CSAs and what's still out there and how the pandemic has hit your local farm. Our guests this hour include the owner of Mud Creek Farm. Ruth Blackwell is back with us. Hi, Ruth. Thanks for making time for the program.
Hi, Evan. Thanks for having me on.
The owner of Deep Root Farm is Eric Hoopert, who is back with us now. Hi, Eric. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, Evan. Always good to be here.
And a CSA member, Zach Holtz, joining us. Hi, Zach. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, I'm a fan of the show. Thanks for having me on.
Zach, what CSA are you a part of?
I've been a member of Mud Creek Farms for, I think, about 5 years.
And how did you get hooked up? How did you get turned down to Mud Creek?
So years ago, my sister actually worked for Ruth, and that's how I became familiar with the farm. And then once my wife and I were ready to commit to a share, we ended up buying in, and it's been great.
Well, listeners, as we go throughout this hour, if you want to share with us via email or phone, that's great. I'd love to hear if you're a part of a CSA, if you've been doing that. Maybe you've been thinking about that. Maybe you're curious what they'll give you. They don't just give you kale, right, Ruth Blackwell? I mean, it's not just kale for a while.
It's not just kale.
It'll probably be a lot of asparagus for a while, which is great. What's coming? How far away are we from seeing a little more of the green stuff, Ruth?
Well, my shares start mid-June. Some CSAs start earlier than mine. I think Eric's does, but mine starts mid-June. I don't currently have any hoop houses set up to be growing things earlier than that. Most of my stuff is in the field, but some CSAs do start earlier than me.
When do you start, Eric?
Yeah, we start a couple weeks earlier. We do have a few tunnels we can kind of get things going on a little bit earlier. We actually start our first seeds in our germination chambers this week. So excited to see some things growing. And then our CSA kicks in probably around the third week of May. There's always a little bit of flux, as Ruth can attest to, with the weather and how long the snow sticks around. But we typically get going mid-May, and we run through November.
Let me start by asking both of you, you know, sort of how you see the history of CSAs, and then if you could, how important it is to your farm, to your business. Ruth, let me start with you here. How have you seen CSAs change? How do you define it for people who say, what is a CSA?
I mean, there's a lot of different ways to organize a CSA, but I think the main concept is that you're a farm and you're selling directly to your customers without there being a middleman. There's no, you're not selling to a grocery store. You're not selling to a distribution network. You're selling directly to your customers. So you have a personal relationship with your customers. And the other main concept in the CSA is that your customers are pre-buying their share. So they're sort of investing in the farm in the beginning of the season, which gives the farmer a lot of flexibility in terms of seed ordering. All of the infrastructure stuff that happens on a farm is really sort of upfront costs. So the farmer doesn't have to go into debt to buy seeds and everything before they're making money from their customers. So customers are really sort of investing in a farm. It's almost like a co-op. And so those are the two main concepts, but other than that, you can really organize it however you like. You can be delivering box shares to places, or you can have your members come to the farm and pick up from you directly.
Do all farms have one now? I mean, I could be wrong, Ruth, but it seems that when I was younger, it felt a little more novel, and now it feels like, oh, yeah, everyone's got a CSA.
It seems like it's really gained popularity. I used to work for Peacework CSA, which was one of the first in the country. They started in the mid-'80s, and they're out in Newark, New York, and for a very, very long time, they were the only show in town. It seems like in the past decade or two that it's really picked up in this area, and now there's a lot of CSAs. And a lot of farms, you know, sell wholesale and then also have a CSA on the side, but then there are farms like me where I'm just a CSA. That's my only mode of farming, so I don't really have any other wholesale accounts.
So that's it. So for you, it's 100% of the business?
I mean, maybe 99%. I will occasionally, if I have so much kale that no one wants to take it anymore, I'll sell the extra to a restaurant. But yeah, mostly it's just CSA.
And, you know, I can't imagine that's all that common. I mean, or am I wrong? I mean, how many of your colleagues in farming are close to 100% like you are?
There's a handful of us, really. There's some really nice things. I mean, for me personally, I enjoy farming this way because I really value having a personal connection with my members. And since I'm focusing so much attention on sort of catering to what my members want, I'd rather just focus on that and not lose sight of that. As long as people still want me to do it, I'll keep doing it.
Eric Hupert, Deep Root Farm. What's the model for you in terms of CSA?
Yeah, we are a bit different, and that is one of the things I'm really excited about, the opportunity to have the conversation specifically with Ruth. Ruth is the person who taught me how to farm and came up under Ruth at Mud Creek. We were members there for a couple years, and then when Ruth took over, I was one of her first hires and spent 4 years with her. And so in many ways, Deep Root was kind of born out of Mud Creek Farm, but has a very different model. And I say that again, I think that's a great opportunity we have today to share with listeners how there's really a broad spectrum of ways to connect with direct sales and direct sourcing from local farms, which is exciting. We do things a bit differently, whereas Mud Creek is connecting with people at that on-farm pickup and directly there every week. People that are looking for that connection, and they do an incredible U-pick where you can pick flowers and herbs and all this stuff that we'll talk more about, I'm sure. We decided to kind of shift and play to another kind of market need where we do distribution sites. So we have a couple of places to pick up, one out by us in the farm. I'm located out in Macedon, past Plainfield. And we partner with Longacre Farms out there, who there's fun winery, ice cream shop, kind of place for it to go with the family, corn maze, all that good stuff. They have a farm store that we drop boxes off there on Wednesdays. We also drop right downtown at the Metropolitan. And then we are locking in on a new site to drop off for Brighton kind of area. Up until this season, I was also at the Brighton market. I did kind of, again, conversely to Ruth, a few different market channels. I did farmers market, restaurants, and CSA. This year, I'm actually taking the season off from the Brighton market to focus explicitly on the CSA, because I do think that we are headed, we big picture, the CSA's kind of culture is headed in an exciting direction. I think that there's a silver lining over the past 18 months or 12 months that's giving us the opportunity to really connect with people on a new level, and we want to spend a lot of time just focusing and delving into that this year. So I'll do about 85% of my sales through a CSA and the rest through restaurants. So we do custom boxes where our members order each week on a Monday. They'll go onto our virtual market, our website that has everything available, and they start the same as Ruth. They pay us ahead of time and they help partner with us in that way, but then they kind of have a drawdown credit where they can shop for the items they want. They put the order in, and then we pack each box custom per order and then drop it off on Wednesdays for them to pick up at those locations.
That's great. And it it sounds to me, Eric, like you've really built, and we're going to talk about this with all of our guests here, kind of, I don't mean to be sort of cheesy, but kind of a family. How does it feel?
Absolutely. As Ruth has said, and I will certainly radiate, and really, as she said too, like the reason why I want to do this, the reason largely why, you know, I felt drawn to farming and to interacting in this way. My education was in community development, economic development, and it just started to click in grad school that the most important way, and for me, the best way to help people was to be in relationship with them and grow food. And so I love that part of it, that community part of it, I think is essential. And it's a little bit different for us to manage because we don't get to see everybody every week. Whereas, you know, they're coming to hang out with the Mud Creek crew every week. So we foster that in different ways through kind of our online communication, the way that we set up the storefront, the way that we interact throughout the season. Hopefully we can move back in a direction sooner than later where we do, you know, events and create kind of opportunities for people to come together physically. And of course that's on hold at the moment. But yeah, we kind of reach out in different creative ways to connect and kind of build that community. But it certainly is. We have a large amount of return, almost all return members this year. I'm actually fortunate enough that I just sold out for the season yesterday, and I didn't even have to really market this year because the members that we've built relationships with over the past 3 years kind of filled that need for us, and we're continuing on with all them.
Wow. See, that is really encouraging to hear, Eric. Talking to Eric Hoopert of Deep Root Farm, Ruth Blackwell of Mud Creek Farm, and in a minute we'll talk to Zach Holtz, who has been a CSA member, and that's very encouraging because when you read about how the pandemic has impacted farmers, it's interesting. There's not a uniform answer. It's very different sometimes from country to country, state to state, region to region, and even farm to farm. So, you know, we'll talk about that in a moment here, what's been the hardest part of the last 12 months, but at least, Eric, it sounds like, you know, for those who are concerned that this was going to kind of cut into the CSA market for you, not for you. Fair, right? I mean, that's good
news.
Yeah,
yeah. And I think that, I think at least around here, most people that most other farmers that I'm in relationships with and talk to, and I know that, you know, this has been true of Ruth last year too, where in a lot of ways, the demand has actually increased for the CSA or CSA style program through the pandemic because it's a safe, non-middleman dependent, you know, cool local relational way to get really healthy, awesome food. And in many ways, I think that even nationally, I know that the numbers we've seen an increase in demand for the CSA program. However, there's still a lot of ways, like last year, our demand was through the roof, but we still fell short of our target because of other distribution channels and infrastructures in place. So it's not always easy, as so many different business owners and all different industries know over the past 12 months. It's even when demand is there, it's the pivoting that can be the challenge and the burden. So I know that is also a lot of a challenge in our world, too.
Yeah, Ruth, can you just add to that before we get Zach's experience here? You know, it is, to me, interesting in sort of a macabre way. I don't mean to make light of it, but I mean, interesting in kind of a rough way to just read how the pandemic has impacted some farms pretty harshly and others less severely. How do you sort of categorize that as it impacts your customer base, your CSA, and what you've had to do over the last year?
It was very interesting because we sort of didn't really know how it would affect the farm, you know, and I feel like there were some ways that I didn't even think of that affected the farm. But I also had the same experience as Eric. I had already planned to sort of scale back last year. So my goal for membership was like 150 shares, full shares. And as soon as the pandemic really started affecting this area, I sold out immediately, which was nice. But then on the other hand, I was, you know, trying to really research how to change my distribution model so that I could keep everybody safe and how to sort of put processes in place to keep my crew safe, just being one of the people who was still working throughout the whole pandemic and running a business. I had to think about all that stuff. Like, I remember last March trying to buy bulk hand sanitizer online and not being able to find any. Being like, what am I going to do? You know, because I was really worried about making sure my members felt safe and kept each other safe during distribution, since I have people coming to the farm, you know, twice a week. So that was very interesting.
Well, Zach Holtz, as a CSA member, for listeners who have never been signed up to do a CSA, maybe they've thought about it, just tell us what it's like as a member, what the schedule's like. If you want, we'd love to weigh in on, love to have you weigh in on what it's like in terms of the relationships that are built. Tell us about it, Zach.
Sure, yeah. Well, I grew up with a garden. My parents are always kind of put a pretty big garden in every year, and then me and my wife dabbled with it as we kind of moved from place to place. And so, you know, having the getting to know Mud Creek through my sister and kind of gradually understanding CSAs, you know, to be honest, there was a little bit of a hurdle, just not really knowing what to expect at first. And of course, you know, the way you have to buy in with that upfront payment, there's a little bit of a psychological barrier. But honestly, after we, you know, got into it that first year, we haven't really looked back. It's been a great experience and well worth the investment. And so, you know, we've bought into a half share, Katie and I, and that means with Ruth, we're picking up every other week. And, you know, for our family, that provides us with plenty of vegetables to kind of cook with and eat throughout those 2 weeks. And I think, you know, once we bought into it and started getting the vegetables, one of the bigger changes that we dealt with was the variety of vegetables that were on our table, you know, vegetables that we hadn't really, you know, may have not been available at the grocery store. Or we didn't know of. And
what's an example?
Kohlrabi and fennel. Yeah. Especially in the early months, there's a lot of greens that are, getting distributed. And so, you know, coming out of the winter season, our diet especially is kind of stew based. And so to make that transition into like heavy greens and trying to figure out, you know, what to pair it with, how to prepare it, was definitely a little bit of a dance. But fortunately, Ruth has a really good website, and she offers great support as far as, you know, what she prefers to use it for and how to prep it and, you know, how to store it and all that. And so it didn't take long to get into a routine. You know, by the second year, you kind of knew what was going to be coming your way for the most part. And, you know, it did take some adjustment in diet, but ultimately that was a really positive thing for us.
Oh, that's good. It's good for your diet, especially when you're coming off the stew season, man. My mother, is obsessed with bowel health, and she'll talk about roughage all day long, but it's good. No, it's fabulous for us. And I think I've got to put you on the spot, Zach. So, kohlrabi, what are you doing with kohlrabi?
Well, it's been about a year since I've thought about it. But, and honestly, the system is nice so that you don't have to opt for certain vegetables. And that is one that I don't eat very often, but typically I'll dice it up and steam it and then season it. You know, the nice thing about all these really wholesome vegetables is a little bit of salt and pepper goes a long way. And, you know, the natural flavor of all these vegetables really does the hard work for you. So
that's great. I mean, I love fennel. What do you like doing with fennel, Zach?
It took a while for me to figure out what to do with fennel. And I grew up, you know, at one point I had Fennel toothpaste and I despised it. And so
Fennel toothpaste?
Oh, yeah. My God.
Some hippie parents.
And so,
what? Wait, hold on. Hold on, Zach. That's a thing?
That's a thing.
Well, fennel flavored toothpaste, yeah.
Fennel flavored toothpaste. So it's like a black licorice toothpaste, kind of.
Yeah, yeah. Not. I don't recommend it, but.
With an oniony bite. Okay, good. Yeah, that's. for kids who want to brush once and never again, try fennel flavored toothpaste. That tagline never worked. I don't know why. So, Zach, right. So what do you like to do with fennel then?
Well, I prefer to grill it. You know, you can slice mm-hmm. it in half and season it really lightly and throw it on the grill. And it pairs really well with that charred flavor you get from cooking over charcoal or flames. So that's how I'd recommend it. Super easy and delicious.
Ruth Blackwell, what are you doing with kohlrabi? What are you doing with fennel?
Kohlrabi, I usually eat it raw. I just peel it, slice it up, dip it in hummus or nothing. Fennel, my husband, who is Italian, hates. But
well, why?
I don't know.
Toothpaste.
Picky. I'm married to a picky person. But I like it grilled. I usually like to slice it up and add it to potatoes and other vegetables and roast a chicken on top of it. That's really good. It kind of loses its a little bit of its sharp licorice flavor once you've cooked it. It gets a little milder.
This is like the most ridiculously, like annoyingly privileged thing to say. So I just want to say I realize that. But I will say, I don't know, it was like 10, 15 years ago, I was in Italy but we met a chef who said, yeah, here we get fennel for like 2 weeks. And I look forward to those weeks and I can't wait to use it. People can't wait for me to have it. So I don't understand this person's Italian and they don't like fennel. But, you know, it takes all kinds in this world, Ruth.
Yes, it does.
what is the Eric Hooper plan for these particular vegetables?
Yeah, these are two good ones. These are two that I hustled a lot at the market because people are unfamiliar with them. I think kohlrabi, of course, as they said, it is great. It's like a very sweet broccoli kind of flavor, but the texture is more of like between an apple and a potato. So it's nice, firm, but not starchy. Delicious flavor to work with. My favorite thing to do for sure, two favorite things, if I'm going to keep it raw, is to grate, coarse grate it and use it as the base of a coleslaw, like summer salads. We do lots of like chopped salads, coleslaws, that type of stuff. And kohlrabi, I think, is one of the best base ingredients for that when it comes to just awesome flavor to pair with a nice crunch of some cabbage. If I'm going to cook it, though, it is the best kept secret in the latke game. You coarse grate it if you're going to make like latkes, like potato pancakes type stuff. If you want a lighter version, something that's a little less heavy, a touch sweeter, coarse grate that, salt it a little bit and let it drain off because it does have more moisture. And then you put a little binding agent in there, some eggs, some breadcrumbs, something like that. Fry it up and have it with some like horseradish. Oh my goodness, that's so good. That's my go-to for kohlrabi and fennel. I think that nothing can beat what Zach said on the grill. I think if people are afraid of fennel, little olive oil, salt, and pepper on the grill, that the sweetness that comes out, the mellowness that it gets is just unbeatable. But if it's raw, I like shaving it, and I am evangelical about the bitter greens, radicchio and escarole and dandelion greens. That's like the thing that I want to bring to the masses. And when you add fennel to radicchio or escarole, a bitter green like that, the sweetness of it with a little vinegar in it is just unstoppable.
I love this. See, this is good stuff here. Eric Hooper from Deep Root Farm, Ruth Blackwell from Mud Creek Farm, Zach Holtz is a CSA member. We're talking about the health of CSAs in this pandemic, and so far, at least anecdotally, the news is pretty good of CSAs. So if you're a CSA member, you know, the likelihood is that you are going to continue to be a CSA member. And frankly, I do wonder, maybe we'll talk about this in our second half hour, if more people are turning to local agriculture during this pandemic for a lot of, you know, sort of understandable and interesting reasons. We're a little more insular. We're a little more close to home. and maybe a little more tuned in and plugged into what's happening in our communities as opposed to what's farther away and further abroad. Let me get Mary in Wayne County on the phone. Go ahead, Mary.
Thanks. Just a couple of things that I think ought to be part of the conversation in the larger sense, mm-hmm. okay? First, and by the way, I have a couple of things to say about kohlrabi at the end. So
sure.
The first thing is some people, but not nearly enough people, are aware of this fact. Wayne County specifically, but this region partly, has a tremendous amount of deep topsoil. It is the largest chunk of deep topsoil practically on the planet. And I think I can't think right now who would be able to talk more about that, but I once saw a soil map, and the whole of Wayne County has something like, in general, 2 to 3 feet depth of topsoil. We are losing topsoil all over the earth. I'm sure everybody's aware of that. That's one of the many factors with regard to climate change. But I'm passionate about people being aware of this so that we conserve this land for growing, for food usage, because we and the generations after us are going to need it desperately. And then the other thing that I care about very much, and it hasn't been part of the discussion, but I do want to raise it, is that we need to look more and more towards organic growing and less, if not almost none, of the pesticides and fungicides, et cetera, et cetera. I know it's a huge subject, but I want to raise it in this context. So let me go back to kohlrabi, because I'm... I didn't want to, change the whole topic, et cetera. But, I mean, CSAs have such a wonderful position at this point, I think, because they are educators. And any farmer, any person who grows or gardens continues to learn and continues to educate themselves. With a CSA, you can educate all your participants, et cetera. And Piecework Farm was not just the first, but it's also a very organic farm, if I understand it correctly. But kohlrabi, I grew up with a French mother, and she had a recipe for just kind of sauteing kohlrabi in chunks with a light cream sauce. And that was one of my favorite things when I was growing up. It was very simple and didn't have many herbs, et cetera, but you don't want to get me started on herbs and all the different wonderful values of food, et cetera. It's not just our taste buds. It's the nutrition that's in these things. And when they're grown with less toxins, there's more nutrition and more nutrition that is available. Yes, they taste better, too. This is all important, I think. So back to you.
Mary, thank you for that. And what I'll do here, Mary calling from Wayne County, what I'll do is let me read from Kevin his quick recipe idea. And then Mary gave our guests a lot to think about there, and I'll give them the floor to respond how they please. But Kevin says, try sauteing 2 finely chopped fennel bulbs along with a diced, neatly caramelized onion and about 1/3 cup of triple sec and salt and pepper. Then serve grilled salmon on top of it. Absolutely delicious. That's very good, Kevin. That might be the thing to get me off of my salmon rut. All I do with salmon is I take brown sugar and Dijon mustard and whisk it together and then just slather that baby with it on both sides, and you just get a beautifully caramelized piece of fish with some nice flakiness. But, Kevin, I'm going to follow this. We're going to go for it. Kevin and Mary with their ideas, but Mary also, I think, Ruth Blackwell, I'll start with you, had a lot to say about the value of CSAs and some of the issues impacting farming. Go ahead, Ruth. What do you think?
That was a great call. I could nerd out about the topsoil in Wayne County for a whole hour, but I'll try and keep it short. Having worked for Peace Work for 4 years, I can tell you that I miss that soil. It was beautiful. And one of the, she also mentioned organic farming. I mean, those two go together. The whole reason to farm organically really is to be building healthy topsoil, as opposed to killing it. So I've always farmed organically. I learned a lot from Peace Work about farming organically, and I also learned a lot from Peace Work about farming for a CSA. One of the nice things about being a CSA farmer is that you're growing a very wide variety of vegetables, and that correlates much easier to being organic than growing one or two different kinds of crops every year. So that's another reason I'm very passionate about being a CSA farmer, is because I'm also passionate about being an organic farmer and building topsoil. The reason for that is that you're growing a lot of, when you're growing a lot of different families of plants, each one sort of has specific diseases and pests that target that specific family. But when you're an organic farm and you're growing a lot of different kinds of vegetables, one of your main ways of deterring pests and diseases is building a crop rotation. So you're growing your potatoes in one field 1 year, and then the next year they're in a very different field. You'll have potato bugs, for instance, who have lived in your potatoes 1 year, go underground for the winter, and when they come up in the spring, they're sitting in broccoli and have no idea where your potatoes are. So that's one of the great things about growing a lot of different things. You can sort of use confusion as your main pesticide. There are other ways to get rid of pests organically, but she brings up some very good points for sure.
Eric Cooper, you want to add to that?
Yeah, I just appreciate Mary's call. I am one of those farmers that gets to grow a few veggies in that Wayne County topsoil. I'm right out there in Madison and Wayne County, and love the piece of ground that I get to steward and grow food on. I do have a lot of rocks, and it can be a pain sometimes, but it's good. It's a great place to grow food, and to kind of just echo Ruth's point on diversity. And I think that carries kind of in all aspects of this conversation, and probably most conversations we can and should be having as a community together, but just recognizing that for me, a farming has taught me like one singular lesson that most other lessons can be born out of. It's that diversity and resilience are always in hand in hand, and thriving diversity is almost always a sign of health. Mm. And again, I think that goes far beyond just growing food here. And I think it's something that the ground can teach us, among many other lessons. But it's a huge part of our system as well. Obviously, being drawn to agriculture in an organic and regenerative sense, and then, you know, also learning from Ruth how to go about executing that, and then taking our own kind of play and our own version of that in what we do. It obviously has a huge net positive impact on the soil, and that's certainly what we consider ourselves, soil farmers above all. And then, of course, that plays into it's as if the earth knows what it's doing, and that plays into the market needs of our customers, and that nobody wants just one thing, kohlrabi, kale, or even tomatoes all season long. You know, we do not advertise as a, even though we implement a lot of flexibility in our program, we have our members have an immense amount of choice in what they get each week. We still are very careful to market as, you know, a commitment to eating seasonally. And there's a ton of benefit there in health and nutrition and flavor and joy, I think, because you do have these, you know, to echo your point about the Italian chef, there are things that come and go quickly, and that's what makes it so special, and that's part of that seasonal experience.
Sure.
We make sure that people know that that's part of the expectation. You know, we're not trying to be all things to all people all the time. We're trying to be the right thing to the right people that you know are looking to eat and partner with a business in this way.
Hmm. Zach Holtz, anything you want to add there?
Yeah, I think Mary's point about the wealth of knowledge that farmers have to offer, it's, you know, it cannot, you can't overstate it. It's every year I try and, you know, have as many conversations with Ruth and her farmers, you know, ask how it's doing, ask how they're doing and how the summer's going. And inevitably we just, you know, you always get into talking about crops and, you know, the difficulties that come around year to year and also the successes. And it's really fascinating. You know, even if it seems like even if they're growing the same thing every year, it fluctuates. There's bumper crops in one area and not in another, and then it changes. And, you know, there's endless amounts to learn. And you can tell, like, even Ruth and these farmers who have been doing it for decades, you know, they're still working adamantly towards, you know, teaching themselves out of necessity, of course, but it's their passion. And so you really can't, you know, that exposure is invaluable, especially, you know, if you're doing any sort of gardening at home to any extent. And so it's almost worth it, you know, just for that alone, you know, even without the vegetables. But yeah, it's just, you know, getting to know the farmers and the network and that's around and getting to talk to them has just been great.
Well, after our only break, Chris and Spencerport, we're coming to you, and I'll just read Claudia's comment. Claudia says, "Not for nothing, Evan, but there's a Tom's of Maine fennel toothpaste that is incredible. It is the licorice thing." All right, I'm going to be converted to fennel toothpaste.
It's terrible. Don't try. Don't do it.
Ruth is saying it's terrible. Look, if somebody grows fennel and then tells you fennel toothpaste is terrible, they're telling you the truth.
It's different.
We're gonna see if I can be swayed. That is one thing I did not think was going to be on the Connections menu today, but that's why you come here. Ruth Blackwell, Eric Hoopert, two farmers from Mud Creek Farm and Deep Root Farm joining us, and Zach Holtz is a CSA member. Let's take that break and right back to your feedback next. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on the Next Connections, a conversation with the executive director and members of the Police Accountability Board in Rochester. We're talking about the grand jury decision in the Daniel Prude case. No Rochester officers will be charged. How does the PAB see their role in the future? And what does the Prude case tell us about what their responsibilities should be? That's Wednesday on Connections. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Chris in Spencerport next on the phone. Hi, Chris. Go ahead.
Hi, Evan. How you doing?
Good, sir.
I'd like to say hi to Eric and Ruth. I know them both. I own an organic farm that does a CSA on the west side of the city. So I was just trying to get a little plug for our farm for anybody that doesn't want to drive out to their awesome CSA on the east side. And it's Growing Family Farms.
Tell us again, where and the name of the farm?
The name of the farm is Growing Family Farms, and it's in Spencerport.
Okay, and you have a CSA?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
We are certified organic as well. Mm.
How central to your business is the CSA?
I would say we're a different model than both of the other farmers on your show. We do probably 25% of our business in CSA. And the rest is market and restaurants.
Sure. And Chris, has that been consistent year to year? Is it sort of steadily growing? Is that at a comfortable place for you?
We grew it by about 50% last year. We're very concerned about being able to, you know, offer multiple items every week so people don't get the kale every week. So we've been scaling it up, but it remains about 25% of our overall business.
Well, good luck to you. Thank you, Chris. Thanks for making the phone call to let us know about the business there. And, yeah, I mean, there's – I don't know how many there are. Ruth, do you have any idea how many CSAs there are right here in our area here?
I'm not sure how many, but I'll tell you right now, most of us know each other. Yeah. Growing Family Farm is a great farm.
No surprise there. I mean – yeah, go ahead, Eric.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was going to say, yeah, to Ruth's point, it's – I think in many ways it's unlike almost any other industry that you know I'm aware of, the amount of collaborative relationship that we have together, and the amount of just friendships are there. Chris and Paul, two of my best friends in the farming game. Ruth taught me how to farm. You know, there's got to be at least 15 or 20, like, immediately outside of Rochester, CSAs that people can be a part of that offer, at, like, all different spectrums, you know, from, like, the one extreme of, like, going on the farm every week to, again, what we do, to somewhere in the middle, picking up at the market or picking up at their farm store, like the guys at Growing Family does, and kind of everywhere in between. Ruth and I order our potting soil together. She gets it delivered to the farm. In a couple of days, I'm going to go out there and pick it up. Paul and I share equipment, like, you know, and that goes beyond just the three of us. That's almost like all inclusive across the board. And just to close out on that point, one thing that we'll be doing over the next couple of weeks is, you know, for our size and what we were looking for this year, our goals, we're fortunate to meet those with our CSA filling up, and we're continuing to get increase. And one thing we'll be doing is posting over the next couple of weeks a pretty exhaustive list of other CSAs to sign up for, and other ways to access food, whether it's going to the Brighton Market, anything like that, part of going to ordering through Headwater Food Hub. There's just a lot of different ways to get good food. And I think all of us collectively care a lot more about that than our individual farm entities. And that's just it's such a privilege to be a part of a community like that.
And it's beautiful.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah,
it really is.
And I know Eric and Ruth and the whole community. I mean, that is not just sort of PR or good feeling spin. I mean, it really is a really close knit community. It's fabulous.
Absolutely.
Deborah sends us a note and says, "What to do with kohlrabi?" She says, "Photograph it. It's beautiful." And she is a photographer. On the side, she's also a doctor and who's done wonderful work. So she takes this, she sends me this black and white image of kohlrabi, black background and the kohlrabi set against it. And I have to say, Dr. Pierce, they kind of look like coronaviruses in this picture.
Oh my God, you're right.
I've never thought about kohlrabi that way here. And maybe it's my brain. Maybe it's my brain on the pandemic.
Kohlrabi sales for 2021.
Connie is just affirming, says, "I love licorice, but fennel toothpaste is awful. However, Nature's Gate anise-flavored toothpaste is a dream, but they don't make it anymore. Anise is much sweeter and totally delicious." Yeah, anise is a little more concentrated in that flavor.
I don't like that toothpaste either.
Ruth is against all of that. Fennel is kind of like, I mean, some people, I was taught years ago that fennel is just, you know, it's just training. It's like anise with training wheels. But I think they're different. But I don't know if one of them should be in a toothpaste. This is from Ellen. Ellen says, "Question for your guests. Do farms that operate on the CSA model already use regenerative farming techniques? Since getting all farms to go regenerative would be a major step forward in combating climate change, how can we who are not farmers educate farmers about this topic and encourage at least our local farms to adopt these healthy, sustainable procedures?" Ruth?
I mean, there isn't any rule that a CSA farm has to be organic or sustainable or regenerative. But I think a lot of farmers out there who are CSA farmers are also interested in that. I know we are. And I think probably the way to educate or support farms that are regenerative is just to make sure when you sign up for a CSA that they are farming the way you want to support farms being. If my terrible grammar makes sense.
Okay. Eric?
Yeah, to echo a lot of that, certainly they are not mutually exclusive. There's, you know, every type of grower in the country offering a CSA. So it certainly wouldn't take that from the consumer perspective as a direct indicator to growing practices. But I also don't think that that's where the conversation starts and stops. I think that there's, like everything, you know, like progress, evolution, all of the movement of growing practices in mass in the field of agriculture, and especially like diverse vegetable production. You know, there's steps, there's phases, there's people kind of meeting different needs in all aspects of it. And that's where I would say, you know, from if I'm speaking to the consumer, you know, in many, many, many ways, demand drives model. So ask, talk to your farmers, talk to grocery store managers, ask, you know, people, ask a produce manager at Wegmans why there's not X, Y, and Z offered, you know, organically, you know, like consumers, we, as consumers, we all need to collectively continue to show interest. Most sustained decisions, I think, in economy is driven from the bottom up, not the top down when it comes to positive shifts, because there's less greed at the bottom. And I think, you know, ask as a consumer, and you know, ask to be educated, show that desire, and that'll continue to move the metric, I think, to more and more producers growing that way, and more transparency. And so much of that goes, all of that goes in tandem, not just with, I don't think that it's all about just organic production, mm-hmm. but it's about supporting proximity-based economies. And I know, I believe we talked about this last year with the farm state of the farmers market episode. You know, as consumers, collectively, I think the more we support proximity-based local economies, the more increased transparency there is, the deeper relationships, and the more trust is built, and all of that plays well to our nutrition.
Yeah, and let me ask Zach Holtz about that as a CSA member. You know, to the point of the listener who is asking about the practices at farms. You know, Zach, I'm sure as a CSA member, you're thrilled to get produce that is, you know, it's going to feed you, it's going to feed your family, it's going to be awesome, it's going to be fresh, you know, it's local, you know, it's, you know, all the things that you want it to be. But how much of it is also, you know, the confidence that you have that you can really feel good about spending the money in this way, that you can support farms that you really feel like are embodying the practices that you would want them to do?
Yeah, it means a lot to my wife and I. And when we first looked into buying, you know, getting a share from a CSA or just going to the farmer's market, you know, more often than the grocery store, you know, we're big advocates of voting with your dollars, and we're fortunate enough to be able to kind of invest in our food. We made that decision early on as a couple and a family. And so, you know, for us, organic practices, you know, 5 or 10 years ago definitely seemed like the way to go to kind of help the world, help the environment. And so we were certainly looking for that through the food we consumed. But to Eric's point, I'd say a little bit bigger than that would be buying local, supporting our local farmers, you know, especially now with the pandemic. You know, it's more and more apparent and how kind of ridiculous it is to source vegetables from across the country or different countries. And so, you know, that was a big part of our decision making. And, you know, it's one of the other benefits of buying local is, as we've talked about, is just getting to know the people that grow the food. You know, it just builds the confidence, you know, that you know what you're eating, what you're putting in your body is just great for you. And, you know, it's, as Ruth mentioned really early on, part of the you know, important things about a CSA and paying for everything up front is to help her, you know, to share any burden that the farmer might encounter throughout the year.
Sure.
And so, you know, we wanted to make sure to, you know, obviously support the farmer through buying their products, but also, you know, support them through any hard times. And so, and obviously if there's bumper, you know, a bumper season, then we get to benefit from that too.
Absolutely. Yeah. You're offering a lot of security, I think, for farmers in uncertain times. And down to our last minute, so let me just rip through a couple quick points the listeners have been bringing up here. CSA week is over, but Ruth Blackwell, the short answer, there's a lot of farms, a lot of CSAs, whether it's Mud Creek, Deep Root, or otherwise. Still time to sign up for CSAs this year?
Yep.
Absolutely.
I've got another month to go before my sign-up deadline, and usually I still try and find some people after that. But I still have shares at mugcreekfarm.com, and I know a lot of other CSAs still do too.
Yeah. Eric, and for listeners who are wondering, is there a typical cost structure? What's the short answer, Eric?
Yes, there typically is. Almost all of us do some version of multiple sizes, usually something like small or large. Like, for example, our small comes in around spending $22-24 a week, closer to 30 for the large, really comparable to what you're buying at Tops or Aldi's or Wegmans or anything like that. So, yeah, that's the way to do it. I'm confident there's an option to meet almost anybody's need out there. Follow along with us on Instagram at Deep Root Farm. We'll be continuing to post what we're doing, but also what other farms are offering over the next 2 weeks.
And Ruth, Michael just wanted to know, we had to do this in 15 seconds or less here. Do most places let you pick your own, or most of the time you're getting what's produced and grown and ready? Is that right?
I think most CSAs that don't have people come to the farm don't have a pick your own section, but since half of our members come to pick up at the farm, we have a pick your own section that's open to members all the time. And my distribution in the city, they're also allowed to come pick whenever they like as well.
Very cool. Ruth Blackwell, owner of Mud Creek Farm. Thank you, Ruth. Always good.
Thank you.
Eric Hoopert, owner of Deep Root Farm. Thank you, Eric.
Thanks, Evan.
Zach Holtz is a CSA member. Thank you, Zach.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Producers Megan Mack, Rob Braden, doing so much work and a lot of hats today. Thank you, Rob. I'm Evan. We'll talk to you tomorrow.